Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
We have a special episode today.
It's special.
We told you we're doing fun stuff to finish out the year. And this episode, we are going to talk about Star Wars.
Dun, dun, dun.
We talk dun, about dun, it dun, offline dun, quite dun, often here dun. At the studio. Dean is kind of like a little more of a novice
Star absolutely. Wars fan. Yes, yes.
Than myself and yes. Our producer, Mark, who, by the way, you're going to hear from producer Mark on this episode as well. In fact, Marco, why don't you go ahead and say something just so the folks can hear you at home.
Hi, everyone.
That's Marco. That is our producer we're always talking about. He's the man behind the scenes. He makes it all happen. He's also an avid Star Wars fan. So that is our topic today.
A little levity today, but I guarantee you our audience has some of that Star Wars nerdyism in them, right?
Exactly. I mean, Here's the thing. If you're in tech, you probably are a Star Wars fan.
Absolutely.
Or some kind of science fiction fan, at least.
100%.
So we're going to talk about our relationship with the movies. We're going to rank the films and talk about the films. We're going to talk about what works and what doesn't in Star Wars. Some of our favorite characters, technology, what we want to see from Star Wars next. It's going to be all things Star Wars. So it is time to plug in and get connected. All right. As mentioned, we are talking about Star Wars. For anybody who watches the video version of this and not the audio version, I totally ripped open my
shirt. There's been a wardrobe
and
change.
And exposed my Star Wars shirt underneath, one of many Star Wars shirts that I own. So. I mean, I wouldn't say that you have to go watch the video to see this. It's not really anything exciting to see. It's just me in a t-shirt, you know, but which isn't as exciting as you might think it is.
Right.
But I just wanted people to know that's what happened at the end of that opening there, in case you were a little confused by all the weirdness. So, all right, let's talk Star Wars. You know, and I want to kick things off by talking about our relationships with Star Wars.
Yep.
I was literally born in 1977. I was born 3 months before the first Star Wars film even came out.
I did not know that. Yes. Like, just, right. Like,
so Star
the golden
Wars,
child was born,
exactly.
And then boom, Star Wars goes out.
Star Wars has like been in my blood my entire life. Now, granted, I don't know when I first saw one of the movies. Like, I do remember seeing Return of the Jedi in a theater. I was six, I guess, when it came out. So I would have seen that in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember watching the other movies on TV back when, like, you know, CBS or ABC would have like their Sunday night movies. You'd see Star Wars films in there a lot. So I remember watching those quite frequently and catching them that way.
Yeah.
So I was very immersed from an early age. I was always a fan of Star Wars. I remember having the toys. I remember having Ewok pajamas at one point.
Nice. You know,
like, I was always a big fan, always embedded in it.
Yes.
And it's always one of those things, too, where it's sort of depressing. Like, every time they say, it's the such-and-such anniversary of Star Wars. I'm like, well, that's how old I am now,
right.
Too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the 50th one is coming up not too far down the road. So, you know, that'll be a little depressing.
Yeah.
So, Dean, what about you? What's your relationship with Star Wars?
Yeah, so I'm a little older than you. I do actually remember, you know, I was seven, I guess, when this first came out. Mm-hmm. So I do remember, I have memories of the films being released. And when I was growing up, Star Wars was the movie. I mean, that's all. If you were a little boy, I guess, in the suburbs of Cincinnati, that's what you're talking about. You're talking about Star Wars. I do remember kids like bragging about how many times they would go to a movie. And that's the first time it still goes on today. Right.
Right.
But that was the first time that anybody started bragging about how many times they actually went to the movie theater to actually see a movie. And I'm telling you, I mean, it was not uncommon to have somebody, I saw it 12 times, you know, and of course it'd be like, it's like a fishtail, you know, did you really go and see it 12 times? Did your mom really?
Yeah, I saw it 20.
Yeah. Right. No. Yeah, I was there. So, right. I mean, all the merch was huge. I mean, of course I had an X-Wing fighter or whatever. I mean, we had all of that. I mean, I can just remember Christmases and birthdays filled with gear, merchandise around Star Wars. So, not as, you know, but I'm not a casual observer, but I mean, I was into it, but not like into it, you know, type
right,
of a thing.
Right.
So that was my initial relationship with it. You know, as the other movies came out that we'll get into as well, you know, just interest. Interest in the sense that I love great films, wanted to know more about the story and stuff like that. But anyway, we'll get there. So, but it's still been, I wouldn't say casual, but yeah, okay, casual.
Right.
What did you call it? What was that? Not casual. Anyway, novice?
Novice.
Yes. I'm a novice.
There you go.
I'm not like Mark.
Right. You're not a super fan.
I'm not a super fan.
But you're a fan.
But I'm... Bingo. There you go.
Well, Marco, tell us a little about your relationship with Star Wars.
Mine is a lot like yours. Yeah. I was born in the fall of 78, so 6, 7 years old is when I started seeing the movies, too.
Nice.
Like you, I had all the merchandise.
Yeah.
The metal lunchbox.
Oh, going to school. Of course.
The thermos. Yeah. Yep. All that stuff.
Perfect.
The Ewoks Christmas special. All that kind of stuff that nobody wants to talk about, but.
Hey, it was there. So. You know, the Ewok cartoon.
Yeah,
the Ewoks cartoon. The droids cartoon.
All that stuff. I was sucked in at an early age too.
Yeah. You know, and I think something that's important to realize for people that are our age, who kind of grew up with Star Wars or were young enough to remember the early days of it, we went through a very long time when Star Wars was kind of not a thing. Like, not that it wasn't there, but that it wasn't a pop culture phenomenon like it is now. It was more of like, hey, everybody remember the movies. People love the movies. And, you know, the movies were part of pop culture. But it wasn't like you were sitting around expecting something new to come out. You know, there was a void from...
No, that was the law. Yeah.
Yeah, 83, I think it was. Yeah, 83 when Return of Jedi came out until 1999 was when the prequels came out.
So it's like people forgot about it.
Yeah, if you were a big fan, there was a lot of stuff in between you could get into. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk a little bit about that.
But for the novice casual guy like me,
right,
it had dropped off the radar.
Exactly. And now, I mean, most people had reached the point where they just assumed like, that was it.
They were
done. Even though we'd all heard George Lucas say that, like, oh, this was supposed to be a 9-episode arc. You know, I created this whole big story. There's a story before, there's a story after. He rebranded the originals with episode 4, 5, and 6.
Now, see, I remember being kind of surprised when that, you know, came out. And I don't know when it was. I'm going to call it the mid-90s or whatever when they started to build up, you know, for The Phantom Menace. I don't remember there being a... I mean, I remember it being a part of a trilogy, but I don't remember there being a prequel and all this other stuff. So that kind of hit me as the novice a little new.
Well, I remember that being confusing for me as a kid because... I think when Empire Strikes Back came out, they actually labeled it as episode 5 and then went back and relabeled the first one as, which was at that time just called Star Wars, as episode 4, A New Hope.
Mm.
And that was confusing enough as well. And I remember as a kid thinking like, wait a minute, did I miss the first 3 somehow? Like, you know, there was no internet. There was no, I wasn't reading Hollywood trade papers or anything. I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, is there 3 out there that I missed somehow? Yeah. And I remember asking my parents at one point, like, can you find me the 3 movies somehow? You know, I mean, VHS wasn't even a thing yet. You know, like,
no.
Yeah. So I had no idea what was going on. It was years later that I finally understood, like, oh, wait, there wasn't a first 3. This guy just saying that these 3 are the middle 3 of a bigger story, which is confusing in its own right. But
well, let's go down a little bit of a wormhole. Sure. So how did you find out your information between, well, let's just say the mid-90s until Phantom Menace was released?
So,
I mean, are there comic books? Or how is that ecosystem communicated?
We'll get into the extended universe stuff a little later. But yes, there was comic books. There was books. Okay. There was novels. Like starting in the
early
90s. But
are these rogue? These aren't George Lucas.
No, starting in the early 90s, Lucasfilm did option their license to like stories around that universe to third parties.
Okay.
And I think Del Rey and Bantam Books, I think, were the two that started publishing books.
Okay.
And there have been probably well over 100 or 200 books up, you know, by now that were published that tell stories. At first, they came out with stories that happened after the original trilogy.
Okay.
Because he told them like, hey, I'll let you tell stories in this universe after the trilogy, and they'll be officially sanctioned. They had to still go through the powers that be at Lucasfilm.
Oh, you're kidding me. I had no idea this all happened.
So they were allowed to do that, and so they put all these books out, but he also told them, like, you can't touch anything from before because I'm still planning to do these prequels, which everyone's like, sure, George, whatever, you know. Because at the time, we just thought, like, no, you're not going to do this.
Right.
And so there was this extended world. There was, you know, fan clubs. Like, I had a Star Wars magazine I got for a while. That's probably where I learned
all right,
stuff,
so fan clubs and magazines. That's where you're hearing the rumor, the what's going on.
And there was always rumors there was going to be new Star Wars.
Oh, I would imagine.
From, you know, as soon as Return of the Jedi was done, like, there was always rumors of more Star Wars.
Now, do you think he was feeding that? Now, looking back, hindsight, do you think he was kind of enabling some of that
to
go on?
Okay. I think he always wanted it. But, and we'll get into this a little too, you know, he always felt like I had to wait until Hollywood special effects and technology gets where I wanted to be before I go on. Because he was never happy with the original trilogy for some reason. Even though, God, they're still
part
amazing
of what,
movies. Yeah.
That's part of what I love about them. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, all right. So now that we've talked about our relationship, let's before we get into some of this all side stuff, let's talk about the movies themselves.
Yes.
And I know I'd asked kind of the two of you to rank them, and I know you may not have actually officially ranked them. So I'm going to give you my rankings from worst to best.
Let's start off with those. Yes.
And we can riff from that a little bit.
Yes.
So here's, and I included.
Worst to best.
And I did strictly the theatrical releases with the exception of the Clone Wars cartoon movie. That's its own thing. Like, even though technically speaking it's canonical, I'm not including that.
Okay.
But I did include the Star Wars story movies, which is Rogue One and Solo.
Oh, okay.
The ones that came out
Fair enough.
between the new movies of the new trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Worst. Bottom of the list for me. Worst. Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
Solo.
Okay.
Phantom Menace.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Rise of Skywalker.
Wow. Okay.
The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi. Marco's already, he's already given faces. Yeah, like, he's you can't already, see him on camera. He's already
he's
given faces.
He's apoplectic right I know, now,
gonna,
but that's okay.
We're going to we're gonna battle over some of this. And then my top four, The Last Jedi, Rogue One, A New Hope, and The Empire Strikes Back.
All right. So wait a minute. Can we all agree that The Last Jedi was four for you?
Yes. Can we all at least agree The Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars film?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
I get the impression you don't necessarily agree.
No, I would definitely have it in my top three. I don't know. I didn't have them quite as elaborately ranked as you are because mine's a little bit more mushy of a ranking.
Well, I think most, the general consensus of Star Wars fans is that The Empire Strikes Back is number one. Now, granted, number two can usually, or sometimes some people will put Return of the Jedi as number one.
Right.
It's usually those two are the flip-flop between most for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I don't know. And I'm a sucker for the original, right? A New Hope. Right. I mean, that was, I don't know. But at the end of the road, I guess, where I would have, mine would have been a flip-flop between Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back. But that's just me. And I'm also a sucker for the newer stuff. Being the novice that I am, a little less connected to the overall arc of the stories and stuff like that, I'm a sucker for special effects and stuff like that. So anyway, that's why.
Well, and this is one of those things, too, that I guarantee you, depending on your age and when you approach the Star Wars trilogy or saga or whatever, whenever you came into this, probably determines also some of your rankings, because I'm sure a lot of folks that were, you know, like millennials that were, you know, born into the 90s, early 2000s, probably are much more fond of the prequel trilogy than we are.
I would agree
with that. For various reasons, you know, and I get that. It's probably, a lot of us, probably their first exposure.
Absolutely.
Special effects amazing to them at the time. So.
Yes, and they're probably looking at the original three like, what's the big deal about these? Look at those old special effects and stuff like that. I will agree with you on Attack of the Clones as being the worst. I don't know. What are you, Marco? You are getting a little red in the face over there.
So I know Marco is not a Last Jedi apologist or a fan necessarily, so I know that's a big part of it. But I do want to hear some, because we've talked about this before.
Do you agree on the number one? Do you agree on the number one?
I agree. Number one and two can flip. Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, just great movies.
That's definitely my number one and two.
Okay.
I am on board with Kanye, and I never thought I would say that in my entire life. Kanye West said that the three prequels were better than the three newer ones, which I agree with. We've seen the creation of Darth Vader, the ultimate bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, those three prequels are as a whole story much better than these three recent Skywalker films we've got.
Right.
Right. So. And I think, I know where my big, because we've had a lot of discussions about this, I think my bigger problem with the prequels is there's a good story that was stretched out over three too many movies. You know, like, you could have done that. Like, honestly, that's why Revenge of the Sith tends to be my highest ranked of those, easily, because that is where I think the movie gets good. That's the stuff you want.
I see.
Attack of the Clones, I feel like, is in the middle because it's at the bottom, like, because there's almost nothing in that movie that's important.
Very little substance.
I mean, and you get the romance, and let's be honest, it's a bad romance. And I'm not a dude who doesn't like romance in his films. Like, that's fine. Like, you know, I'm
you're
not,
okay with the human side and the romance.
I'm not a guy who hates, you know, love and romance in movies. No, like it's not my thing at all. It's more that, and honestly, the bulk of it comes from the dialogue, which is one of my bigger beefs with George Lucas in general. And you know, we can kind of maybe talk a little bit about that. Like, fans, I think, have a very love-hate relationship with George Lucas. You know, we loved and adored and idolized him for a very long
time.
And then those of us, when the prequels came out, and when he started messing around with the originals with the special editions, had that feeling of, ugh.
Now, wait a minute.
What are we doing?
Let's go back in time a little bit here.
Sure.
So The Phantom Menace, there's some build-up here. It comes out in 1999.
Right.
When it first came out, we've dialogued about this, and Marco, I forget where you landed on this. You originally liked it?
Oh, I was...
Like, you were all in, and then it's like...
Now,
it grew moss on you, and you became less likely.
I won't say that I loved it. It was one of those things where, like, it was Star Wars, and I was so excited...
So hungry for Star Wars.
...to go to a theater as an adult now, and not as a child anymore, who didn't really understand how awesome this was at the time.
Got it.
I loved the idea of... Yeah, I totally waited in line from, like, 5 a.m. to, like, 3 p.m. to get tickets for opening night or something like that. Right. Got sunburned, you know, and, like... Went and saw the movie like three times over the first day, I think. And what's funny is I actually read the novelization before I saw the movie, which is something I almost never do.
Mm.
But it was one of those things I could not handle myself. And I worked in a bookstore at a time.
Okay.
So I got to have an advanced copy of the book.
Oh, wow.
Before it was released. Actually, I still think
so
it
you
came,
went in with preconceived
well,
ideas.
Well, I think it came out even before the movie was actually released. For some reason at the time, there were these... So...
Gotcha.
So I actually did... read it ahead of time. And I remember reading the book and kind of being like, that's an okay story. Not really sure what I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and saw the movie and I was like, yeah, Star Wars. And I saw it again. I'm like, yeah, Star Wars. And I saw it another time. I'm like, Star Wars. You know, like, it was fun that it was there. And I was there opening night.
We're starting to see some cracks
It's true.
You know.
I was there opening night for Attack of the Clones. And that was the one that really was just like, ugh. Like, I may not have even seen it a second time in the theater. Maybe I did.
Okay.
Revenge of the Sith, I didn't even go on opening night. I didn't even go opening night to Revenge of the Sith. That tells you how disenfranchised I felt at that point.
Now, do you think, are you, like the average, well, I'm not going to say the average Star Wars aficionado. Do you think most people felt that way that love Star Wars, or is there like a 50-50
camp? I think at the time if you were someone who grew up with Star Wars, you probably felt to that extent some way during that time. Marco, would you agree? Did you feel a little bit let down after those movies?
After a certain point, for sure.
And the letdown is where again? On just the story itself, or
it's
the overuse of CGI,
the
characters that were brought
awful.
In.
You're right. The overuse of CGI is one of them,
mm-hmm.
which at the time was like fine, but like CGI is so much better now than it was then. That going back, like I recently rewatched all the movies again before the last one came out, before Rise of Skywalker came out, and I remember watching the prequels again and thinking, man, like this special effects just looks terrible now. Mm-hmm. Already 20
now
years later,
it does,
looks terrible.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And yet, I can go back and watch the original trilogy. And granted, you know they've touched them up a bit, but even before they got touched up. Some of that practical effects work still looks so amazing. And it's part of why I did enjoy the newer movies a little bit more, because I feel like they took that step back. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. They took that step back and focused on more practical technology again. And they're better at blending in special effects now that it's a lot more seamless than before. It's a lot less obvious.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was a huge problem that occurred at that time is you basically had three movies that were essentially cartoons with some people in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's still what, to this day, I watch them and go, man, like there's... This could be this. If this looked a little better, I probably would appreciate him a little bit more. And then the other part is the dialogue, which let's be honest, you go back to the originals, the dialogue's pretty bad too. Especially the first one, A New Hope, the dialogue's pretty awful. I don't think George Lucas can write good dialogue. I think he's a master storyteller. I think he has great ideas, but he needs to let other people do the writing.
Do the writing. Yeah.
And that was what, like, you know, Empire and Return of the Jedi, where other people did the screenplays.
Yep.
And other people directed them also.
Yep.
And then the prequels was all him. They let him do all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Writing, screenwriting, directing, everything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like you're best when you are a step back and letting other people kind of, you know, take your ideas and turn it into something.
Gotcha.
Better.
But wait a minute. I thought one of the prequels was in your top four. No?
No.
Okay. Then, okay.
No. The Last Jedi is one of the sequels.
Okay.
Is there.
Yeah, all right. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
So.
Yeah.
All right. So any other disputes about, like, I know Marco, you know, is not a fan of The Last Jedi. We've talked about this many, many times before.
See, and so for the sequel, I don't mind. And so I like them because visually I like them. I get it now. I have a deeper understanding of the story and how it's not really the best from that perspective. But, you know, just from a visually compelling type of a movie, I don't know.
They're amazing.
They're really amazing to watch.
I would hardly agree with that. I think where the point I've reached is I stopped caring about the Skywalker saga.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between the prequels and the new movies, I was like, all right, like, I enjoyed the new characters. I wanted to see more of the new characters. And then it became very much about the Skywalker family again, a little too much for my taste. And I get they needed to wrap it up, and it is their story, all things considered. But I've kind of reached the point where I'm glad we're done with those. I'm ready for new Star Wars that has nothing to do with the Skywalkers. Because, you know,
and I get it, but again, from the casual observer, it seemed like it was all about the Skywalker.
It was.
So we really needed, I don't know, for me, I kind of needed that.
Right.
That angle of it.
So that brings me to another point then, because, and why I think the future of Star Wars can still be very bright, is that I think we've done enough with Star Wars at this point that you can refer to it as a concept that I've heard actually this referred to in Star Trek before, but I think it can work for Star Wars. And it has, because we're seeing it with the newer stuff like The Mandalorian and some of the cartoons and stuff that have come out, is the idea of Star Wars as a place. It's not a thing. It's not an actual, like, it's not its own story. It's a place. It's a world now. You've developed this entire literal galaxy of planets and species and types of people and types of situations that you can basically tell, you can tell any story in that frame set in Star Wars. You could tell a legitimate good love story set in the Star Wars world.
Absolutely.
You can tell The Mandalorian, the new show that's on Disney Plus, is essentially a Western mixed with an anime.
That's true. Of, you
know,
that's true.
It's a little bit of both. It's essentially a Western, you know, set in the world of Star Wars.
Yep.
I mean, so I think that's kind of where the future of Star Wars might be going, is this idea that, like, hey, we've got this universe that has so much cool stuff in it. And yes, you're always going to throw in all the cool, neat stuff that the fans are going to be excited about. You know, like,
now, do you think that as these stories progress, are they going to be around the era of Star Wars?
No.
Or do you think they'll start branching out hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands?
I think we'll start expanding.
Yeah?
There's been talks.
You don't think that we need to be around the core to understand more about how the universe...
Because at this point, like, you understand the Force. Everybody gets that.
Yeah.
And if it's 1,000 years before or 1,000 years later and somebody can wield the Force, we get that. We understand, you know, spaceships and visiting other planets. We get all of that stuff now that I don't think you have to be confined to that era to make it relevant. So there's been some discussion, I think, about, like, we don't really still know yet what some of the future movies are coming, which, by the way, if you thought Star Wars was done, there are at least two entire trilogies.
Oh, really? In the works. Okay.
One that I believe Rian Johnson is working on, and the Marco's not a fan of.
That's a thumbs down,
He was
down,
the guy that
apparently.
Directed The Last Jedi, which is not one of his favorite movies.
I see. Yeah.
And then another, which originally the guys that did Game of Thrones were supposed to do it, but they got it taken away from them because they're kind of not great guys, you know, who don't really care about fans or, you know, franchises.
So that doesn't mesh with Disney very
well. Yeah. Right. So they got it taken away from them. I feel like I heard there was someone else that is, like, been handed the reins of a new trilogy, but I don't remember. I want to say, actually, maybe Taika Waititi, who has done a lot of, like, off stuff that most people don't know, but he also did Thor Ragnarok of the Marvel movies. But anyway, so there's been talks about new trilogies, and one of the rumors is going to be back in the days of the Old Republic. So literally like 1,000 years or more back, maybe even more than that.
Yeah, the golden age of the Jedi.
Like, so, like, back when the Jedi were at the peak of their power and, like, basically kind of the rise of the Sith or whatever, and, you know, like how the everything began, kind of.
Well, see, that's why I'm asking the question, because, you know, as I sit back and think about some of the things that I would like to have explained, like the Force would be one of those. But if that's, like, one of these eternal things that's always been there and will always be there.
Well, they tried to explain in the prequels and it was awful.
Well, right. Okay. So that didn't
work. There's little bugs in our body or something. You know?
Well, no, like, it's the mag. What is it called?
Midichlorians.
Midichlorians. Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, right. He has 20,000 midichlorians in him, Anakin did, or something like that. It was. That didn't really mesh really well.
And
I mean,
no, and you'll notice they dropped that. And, like, you do not hear about that in Star Wars anymore.
Well,
no,
because
one talks about that anymore.
Because it went over everybody's, well, it went over my head, you know, when they were talking about it. And I didn't realize it until we started talking about, oh, yeah, it's the midichlorians. What's the what?
Yeah, exactly.
So they need to re-explain that.
I would be okay with that, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, there's certain, you know, like that. That's one of those things. Or how did the Empire get to be where it is? I mean, I don't know. Do you think they'll start going, when they go back, they're going to explain those types of things?
Maybe. I mean, here's the thing. There's been, and this is, again, you know, when we talk about the expanded universe of Star Wars, now, there was an expanded universe that occurred from, like, basically late 80s until the prequels came out, and maybe even a little beyond that, actually, too. Basically until Disney bought Star Wars, because Lucas was like, okay, I got to do my prequel thing. I'll let anybody else who wants to tell stories after the original trilogy go and tell them. And there's a trilogy of books, actually, that came out called the Thrawn Trilogy. by an author named Timothy Zahn that is about the next best thing to actually new Star Wars movies. For me, it was like back in the, I think they started in maybe 88, 89. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there was three books and it was set 5 years after the Return of the Jedi, told this whole new story where, you know, Luke and Leia and Han met some new people. They were trying to keep the Republic together. There was this threat that came out from the former Empire, you know, this Grand Admiral who had control of some powerful ships and wanted to, you know, try to rebuild the Empire and take things down. Great story. Like, I would have, if you turned those into movies, I would have thought they were amazing movies. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff, like, there was a big, huge story that built out over, like, that took place decades to hundreds of years past the original trilogy that was built out. But when Disney bought the franchise, whoop, they said, well, we're planning on doing our own sequels, so all that now is now void. So they call that, like, the Legends stories now. Got so, like, it. Legends of the Star Wars universe. And now Disney's canon has taken over. And again, there's also been a bunch of new books and comic books and stuff that's filling in the gaps. There's been two cartoon series, mm-hmm. Two major ones at least, mm-hmm. The Clone Wars cartoon yep. and Rebels, which take place between, well, the Clone Wars literally takes place between episodes 2 and 3 mm-hmm. and is infinitely better than either one of them combined, in my opinion, at least. It tells a fantastic story. It has a fantastic character in it, we'll get to later. And then Rebels is somewhere close before the first original Star Wars film, like in the year or two before when, you know, as the rebellion is beginning.
Beginning.
You know,
okay.
And leading up to the, you know, basically where Star Wars kind of kicks off and where Rogue One, you know, occurred essentially. So there's been a lot of stuff out there. There's already people who have been telling stories, some that are no longer considered as canon, some of them that are considered as like, yes, this actually exists now. Mm-hmm. So I think we've reached a point where Star Wars as a huge concept of episode 1 through 9 is mostly done. I don't think we're going to see a lot more stories in between. Granted, The Mandalorian takes place between there.
Right.
I think the Obi-Wan show will, I mean, it'll have to, obviously, take place somewhere in between there.
But other than that, we're moving on.
Yes, yeah. I think you're going to see stuff either farther in the future or back in the past after this.
Fair enough. Well, going back to your list, and I know we got off on the tangent there. I will agree with you that Revenge of the Sith is usually up high, you know, because like if I ask my daughter, okay, well, what do you want to go back and watch? Because we've seen them all at this point in time. And she's the only one who will watch a movie with me at this point in time as well. But Revenge of the Sith comes up. You know, it's a good film.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good film.
It works, like the latter half of it especially works really well for like the fall of, you know, disgrace of Anakin, you know, the fall of the Jedi, the foundation of the Empire, like that stuff, like, that's what I wanted to see in the prequels.
Right.
So that was always what I wanted to see in the prequels.
So for me, it's a little bit more, you know, I've got Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi as like, you know, my favorites. Revenge of the Sith is up there. And then the other ones, there's a lot of middle in there. But I have to agree that the Clone Wars or Attack of the Clones is just bad.
Now, I want to quickly, like before that. We get off on
like,
some
I can't
other...
even watch it now. It's like, boom, that's really
it is,
bad.
Yeah. Before we get off on some other stuff, I do want to kind of quickly talk about and get your both of your feelings on Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rogue One.
I do.
I put it third on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of the reason why, I know a lot of fans kind of dismiss it as like, well, whatever. It's, you know, it's like a barely there side story about how, you know, we got the plans for the Death Star in the original film. Hey, by the way, folks, spoiler alerts in this podcast, if you haven't noticed already. cover your ears if you don't want to hear anything about the movies. We'll keep some of the brand new stuff, you know, a little bit more contained. But, you know, we're talking about movies that have been out for a while. Rogue One, I love it because, to me, Rogue One is, if you're going to talk about, we call it Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Rogue One is a war movie.
Mm-hmm.
The other movies are, you know, a movie where like a war is sort of happening. And there's a tangential story going on that we're following throughout this war. Rogue One is a war film. It is the guys have to raid the bunker where, you know, the Germans are keeping their military weaponry or something like that and blow it up or something kind of thing. Like that is what
full
that kind
assault.
Of story
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I love it for that reason because it's a very concise, cool story. The effects are amazing. The music is amazing. Like I just like, for some reason, that movie just absolutely works for me. And more importantly, the end of that movie, which again, spoiler alerts here, big time spoiler alert. If for some reason you haven't seen Rogue One, when Darth Vader shows up in that corridor, and granted, you'd already seen him in the movie, but when he shows up in that corridor and starts just slaughtering rebels, and from there until the very end, when they hand the plans to the CGI Princess Leia, you know, rest in peace, Carrie Fisher, you know, couldn't actually do the film. I guess actually she did record the voice for that. I was like on the edge of my seat. That is one of the movie going experiences I will never forget.
I'll be darned.
I remember sitting there for the last like 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes of that movie, just on the edge of my seat, white knuckled, watching Vader do Vader stuff, like, because let's be honest, he's always just in the movies, was always just this dude in a big suit.
Exactly.
We never got to see him really move and do cool stuff.
And be as dastardly.
Yeah.
As
he, and he's just purely evil, just cutting people down. Yeah. And then they barely get away. They give those plans to her. Yeah. And I mean, basically, you were literally walking up right to the very second that the original Star Wars movie opens.
Yep.
And I remember at the end of that film just being like just so in awe. There was tears in my eyes. I'm like, this is amazing.
That was awesome.
Yeah. So that's why I have such a fondness
for agree
Rogue
with
it's
Rogue One.
It's a very visceral reaction to Game.
Yeah. Yeah. And just a really, just a good movie, you know, as well. And a lot of emotion, I think maybe it was the fact that it was such a battle movie and there was just a lot of emotion wrapped in the movie itself. Great, great story. I don't know. Marco, do you like it? Would you put Rogue One? Okay.
I loved Rogue One. I think the reason a lot of people don't like it or don't feel that it's a Star Wars movie is it was the first movie that never followed a Jedi.
Mm,
right. There were no lightsabers. We always followed a Jedi.
So. Yeah, yeah, good point.
So, you got a lightsaber in there from Vader, and that was it. Yeah. You got to throw, there has to be a token lightsaber apparently in every Star Wars film. But no, but that's actually an interesting point. And maybe let's kind of dive into fan culture a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because Star Wars has a very interesting and complicated fan culture, and it's one that I think has a kind of a negative rap these days, and I'm not saying that's not for a good reason, but, you know, again, it's a rabid fan base. Most people that are fans of science fiction franchises become a rabid fan base at some point where we love everything, we nitpick everything, we're fascinated by it all, we want to know it all, we want to understand it all. And I think in the last, you know, since basically the prequels essentially and on, fans have had a very complicated relationship with Star Wars, whether it's how you felt about the movies, what you felt you were owed. And I think that's a big problem with fan cultures in general, not just Star Wars, but a lot of fan cultures, is the idea that as a fan, I'm owed something by the creators. I'm owed a story that I want, whether it's the story that the creators wanted or a story that other people like and I don't. And I feel like there's been a lot of division in Star Wars culture about that, in the line, especially when the newer movies came out. You know, there was a lot of people that were upset that a woman was the lead character in the new movies.
Rey.
You know, that Rey was a lead character. The woman that plays Rose Tirico in Last Jedi, like, got harassed online because she was Asian and a woman and dared to show up in a Star Wars movie or something. I don't know. It's a lot of stupid stuff that's
crazy.
That, you know, just it doesn't belong in my version of fan culture. You know, like, I don't feel like Star Wars owes me anything. Like, I'm more than happy to critique stuff and say that, like, yes, I think this film is bad, I think this film is great, there's things I did or didn't like. But, you know, deciding that, like, you know, a movie owes you something, like, hey, this is, you know, kind of to what you just said about Rogue One, you're right, a lot of people were like, well, this movie doesn't have Jedis in it, Star Wars is about Jedi. Is it though? I mean, I get that we had Jedi in it, but again, if we go back to that idea of Star Wars as a place, it doesn't have to.
No. Yeah, it's a component.
The
but
Mandalorian
it's not.
Has been a very successful show. There are no Jedi in that movie.
No.
Has there even been a single Jedi yet? I don't think we've seen a lightsaber or a Jedi yet.
No.
Well, are we assuming Baby Yoda's not of that?
Yes. Baby Yoda, you know, is obviously
Not gone through the proper training yet.
Right.
Okay.
And he's also not Yoda. That's the key thing to remember.
Fair. Yeah. But we don't know the species name either.
No,
yet,
we know nothing about them. I'm assuming this season we're going to potentially learn
something.
Because he's on a quest to return.
Well, I got to tell you, that's the biggest cliffhanger right now.
Right.
But I know we're not going to.
Yeah, you're right.
But anyway,
so
the fandom is, again, from a casual novice observer, really interesting that there's this much behind the scenes battling going on between the fans and
there's some toxicity. There's you know, like, there are some people that are probably turned off of Star Wars because of the aggressiveness of the fandom sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of, and again, this is not just a Star Wars problem. This is a problem with a lot of science fiction and a lot of genre stuff that is typically considered as male. Where, you know, there's been a lot of, like, backlash against women that want to be involved in Star Wars. And, you know, what's her name? Kathleen, I cannot remember her last name.
Kathleen Kennedy?
Kennedy was one of the producers of the original trilogy, worked very closely with Lucas, was considered one of the founding members of, you know, all things Star Wars, is a woman, you know, like, and again, who decided that Star Wars belonged to men or women? Or who decided that Star Wars belongs to a certain type of person? It doesn't. No, it belongs to anybody that wants to engage with it and wants to enjoy it. The same with any fan culture, obviously.
Yeah.
But yes, there's been some unfortunate, you know.
Wow. I don't know.
Backlash going on.
I don't
know what the right word is. You're probably better off if you don't know much about
it. I don't.
I stay away from it. Because
it seems a little petty.
Myself.
You know, but to me, but I don't know. So does Star Trek have that kind of issue?
Not as bad. It does. And I'm starting to see it with the new stuff. Because, you know, there's new Star Trek series that have been coming out.
Right.
You're starting to see a lot of fans are like, not my Star Trek. Because it's a little more action oriented.
Okay.
It's a little more heavy on the special effects. Mm-hmm. It's not as science driven as it used to be.
Okay.
It's a lot more actiony than before.
Yep.
So there are, and I love most of the new Star Trek, you know, but again, it's one of those things like, you know,
I guess
not everything has to stay the same. You know, if it does, it's probably not going to be good for very long.
Yeah. You can't please everybody all the time.
You can't.
You just can't. No.
And it's okay. If there's a Star Wars movie or a Star Trek show, if there's something you don't like that doesn't fit your version of it, don't watch it. It's fine. You know, move on. Go back and rewatch what you do enjoy.
Well, and maybe that's a good transition into what works for Star Wars,
right,
if you ask me. Because, you know, the hero's journey, I think that it is like a classic hero's journey that really sucks people in. And you're much more literally astute than I am. But I know that, you know, heroes and has been around ever since writing's been around, right? And the hero journey and just, you know, many, many iterations of that. But Star Wars is, to me, is like just the manifestation of that. And it's very obvious that that is. And I think that, and maybe you know better than I do, they were very overt about some of the good versus evil, black and white.
Right.
And a lot of that played into the original. And I think that it did a really good job of bringing people in. I mean, I'm talking all people. I mean, you can walk around to all walks of life, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think Star Wars is something that just about anybody can talk about, recognize, well, at least recognize
it.
Whether or not they'll get into it, they'll recognize it and recognize the hero's journey that is the Skywalker, you know, whatever.
You say that because Lucas has acknowledged that, like, well, a lot of what inspired him to make Star Wars was an author named Joseph Campbell, who wrote a book called The Hero of a Thousand Faces.
Okay.
Which is all about the tropes of mythology and of heroes' journeys, basically.
Yep.
Like this book all about, like, hey, ever since like classic Greek mythology all the way up to, you know, and you know, this book was written probably several decades ago, you know, all the way up till, you know, whenever he was, he wrote like almost a lot of stories revolve around the idea of a hero's journey, a hero who was not in any way connected to what was going on, was out of the
stumbled
loop.
Into it,
fell into it, had a wise mentor of some sort that helped them, you know, became a powerful person and overcame some kind of, you know, evil force or, you know, some kind of force for evil of sorts.
And usually a personal journey in that, you know, they have to overcome something personal.
I read the book a long time ago and like, it totally like lays out like everything that is kind of the roadmap for like half of the film and television and pop culture that we follow today.
Yeah.
So he acknowledged that, that was a big part of what he wanted to do. And I think you're right. On that level, that is where Star Wars has, and I think always will kind of work, is the idea of getting down to the nitty gritty of a hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even when we do expand out and start telling other different stories, you're always going to see probably some version
of that would be the expectation. I mean, me as the novice, I would expect that. Because when you just look at the Star Wars, you know, from a step back from my perspective, it's that is the lure that brings in, you know, at a high level. I don't need to get into the weeds and how people are, you know, torn about characters and who plays what role and stuff like that. To me, it's more about the journey and the epic nature of the whole story.
Right.
And I don't know what percentage of the population, I don't know, you know, is in that fold, or what percentage of Star Wars watchers are, you know, truly into it, know the whole in story backstory. Is it I don't know, but I would guess
probably a decent amount, but
a decent amount,
but
yes.
But I think to your other point that I think you're hitting at there is I think the fandom that's that toxic fandom is a lot smaller than we're led to believe. They're just like anybody who's
they've got a megaphone.
Exactly. They've got a megaphone. They're the ones who are shouting the loudest, while the rest of us are just watching our movies and enjoying them and going about our day.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have to get on every single website and every place and leave some comments, you know, like, I'm mad about this. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
They are the minority. They're just the loud ones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, for every one of them that's screaming about something, there are probably 100,000 of us that are like, no, this is awesome. We're enjoying this. It may not have been my favorite, but I it's fine.
Yeah. So obviously if this hero's journey is something that's been working through thousands of years now, I don't see why it wouldn't continue on.
Exactly.
Certainly in Star Wars, you know, in the future, I mean, they would be right to do so.
Definitely.
Because it just lends itself to a lot of that. A lot of cool. Anyway,
I agree.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to talk about a couple of my things that I love about Star Wars. The special effects obviously are still important, even though, you know, I you know, kind of dragged on the prequels a little bit. You know, I think there was an over-reliance on, you know, CGI there. And also the special editions that were released in 97 of the original trilogy that crammed a lot of that kind of stuff in there. Mm-hmm. But again, you go back to that original trilogy, you know, if you go even to the original unedited versions that haven't been touched up, like, you can see a few things at the seams, but for the most part, a lot of that practical filmmaking looks amazing.
Unbelievable.
I'm still amazed that you can make movies with such practical. I mean, I think, like, I remember reading something that, like, one of the spaceships in the big battle at the end of Return of the Jedi is a tennis shoe in the background. Like, it's that kind of stuff where, like, they just found random stuff and figured out a way to shoot it to make it all look amazing and look like you are watching a legit space battle, which
and
still
you
holds
did.
Up.
Oh, and it still holds up. Even today, if you ask me.
40 going on, almost 50-year-old movies still look pretty much as good as when they were released today.
And would have no problem feeling that was just produced recently. And truly an art. We've talked about it. I mean, to me, I think that is part of the special lure of the Star Wars, whatever brand. What came in the original three movies and just the way that they were shot, how everything was done in camera. It's amazing. Then it still today holds up, and which is so cool. I mean, just even when he swoops down and goes, you know, and just that whole thing. It's
you
just
still get tingles about it.
You're there. I mean, you're there with the characters. Yeah. It's just, I love stuff that's done in camera like that. Yeah. It's really, really cool. Which is why, you know, when you go back and watch Attack of the Clones, it's like, you know, at the time I was a little bit less critical. You know, I was more in wow of what CGI could do because I've been in the video industry for a long time. So, you know, to know what we could do as a small production house and, you know, our little 3D animations, and we could make blocks spin. Isn't that cool? And what they were doing with CGI is like, oh my gosh, that's just on a different level.
Right.
At the time it was cool. But now when you go back and look at it, it's like, oh, it's like that party shirt, I guess, you bought and you thought you were cool. And at the time, it's not so cool anymore. It's just really obvious how bad some of that is now. But the original holds up. Yeah. What do you think, Marco?
Well, I mean, coming from the perspective of a guy who went to school for film.
And
stuff, there were so many techniques, so many processes that came out of Star Wars just to learn from, because these guys were not afraid to take chances and try things, which I feel like is lost art now.
Yeah.
Right.
In filmmaking. So.
Yeah. Well, the trying is in the computer now. I don't know. And we've talked about maybe there's a little bit of a resurgence now going about the theatrics of trying to do stuff in camera. Do we have any idea what his budget was for that first one and who the special effects people were?
Marcus looking it up right now. I want to say, like, it was not, compared to what you see now, it was nothing. It was insignificant.
Because going back, do I have this right? Lucas directed American Graffiti? No, what did he do?
He did American Graffiti in a very small science fiction film, like black and white film called THX 1138 that most people don't know much about.
Oh, good Lord.
That was his only two made, and that was almost like a student thesis kind of project.
So
thing.
He was like, yeah, go ahead.
His budget for A New Hope was $11 million.
That's unbelievable.
That gets you through
today. Even in today's dollars.
That gets you through 1 month of shooting if you're lucky.
He made at the box office $775 million.
Okay, so but even $11 million dollars to produce, I mean, in today's dollars,
that's like George Clooney's salary now. You know,
let's just go crazy. I know that the math isn't working out, but let's say that's $100 million in today's dollars. That's still nothing.
No, I mean the big budget movies now, like when a Marvel puts out a new movie, or for instance, any of the other Star Wars films that have come out recently, I'm sure they're all $200-300 million plus easily.
Yeah. That's amazing. You know, that's a shoestring budget, and to pull off what they did. So, are some of the unsung heroes of the Star Wars the people that work behind the scenes
and
made that work?
Like, it's one of those things where, like, I do know, like, a lot of the names of, like, people that were. Marco, what do you got on the?
So the budget for Last Jedi was $317 million.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And I'm sure Rise of Skywalker was even higher than that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about that, in just 40 years' time,
mm-hmm.
tripling the budget. Or a movie that still looks pretty damn good, all things considered.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. There is so many people that came at it. And Marco made a great point about, like,
excellent point.
The stuff that has resonated. You know, I think, you know, regardless of your conflicted feelings about George Lucas and what you think of him as a filmmaker then versus now and where he's progressed and, you know, his legacy, mm-hmm. you have to acknowledge that, like, the man created a template for blockbuster science fiction films
yep.
that so many others have used since and probably inspired so many other people
yep.
since then, you know, to get where he, to get where they are now. And like, you know, anytime you watch a Marvel movie or you watch, you know, some big new blockbuster film, I guarantee you there's more than a handful of filmmakers on that film that owe a debt of gratitude to Lucas and what he accomplished and what his team accomplished.
Gotta be, because I'm remembering back, because I don't remember, of course I don't remember a lot at that age, but I don't remember anything even close to that. Do you remember Battlestar Galactica?
Oh yeah.
So I think
which was basically a Star Wars ripoff in the 70s. Yeah,
absolutely. Late 70s. You're right. Yeah. So I was just looking that up. That came out in 1978. So obviously yeah. inspired a little bit by that. But even then, I mean, it's just, there was nothing like Star Wars that they were producing at that point in time.
Definitely.
A lot of effects, a lot of the way that things were shot came out of that.
Sound effects, visual effects, yep. everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to mention the sound part. Well, first of all, I'll get to the music in a second, but the sound design of Star Wars is something I think still holds up to this day as well.
Yep.
I believe Ben Burtt is the name of one of the major sound designers from the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's associated in some way with the film, and I believe it's with sound, or it might be visual effects, but the sound effects that were created in that original film and the stuff that still lent itself to today, like the way a blaster sounds when it's being shot, the way a lightsaber sounds when it's turned on, the way the ship sounded. Yeah, you can complain there's not supposed to be sound in space. Whatever. It sounds awesome when a TIE fighter or in the Millennium Falcon is flying by. It's very visceral sounds, again, that just really clings to you. And yeah. and I will give, this is where I'll give some super credit to the prequel trilogy. There is some amazing sound work in that movie, too. Was Ben Burtt the sound guy? Okay, I thought so. So, like, the prequel trilogy, I remember... one of the few things I liked about Attack of the Clones is there's a sequence when Jango Fett and Boba Fett are chasing Obi-Wan through an asteroid field.
Okay.
And they're dropping these mines. And when the mines go off, there's a sound that they make. This like, whoom, as it's blowing up stuff. And again, it's not realistic, yes.
Right.
But like that and the sounds of the ships, like... There is a audio language to Star Wars that
there
few
is.
Other films have.
100% agree.
You could literally not be in the room and hear the sound effects from Star Wars just by itself, and you would know that someone was watching something Star Wars.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
And there's very few other properties. I mean, Star Trek, I think to some extent can say that.
Yeah.
But not in the same way as Star
Maybe
Wars.
Maybe the communicator
can.
When it opens up.
Right.
Tick, 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 you know, that has a,
yeah.
has a but
like a sound of a transporter or something. But yeah.
You hear
so
a lightsaber,
much
you hear absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, or a TIE fighter. Those sounds are just like ingrained into it. And in the audio landscape, obviously, I'm thankful that a lot of time was spent on that and the importance was given to that, because I think that that does draw the overall picture of the Star Wars much more vividly than
right.
it would have been had they maybe not spent as much time or not had, I don't know who the people were involved in it, but obviously they were very skilled at what
yeah.
they can do.
Yeah.
And to your point, Marco, they got inventive, because I think, isn't the gun sound like they are clacking wrenches on
oh, yeah.
big
the
lines?
The Foley work
like,
in those movies
is unbelievable,
are outstanding. Like,
yeah,
and I mean that's something that I'm always fascinated by. Whenever you talk to somebody in that line of work and the stuff that I remember being in San Francisco once when I was in high school and going to some kind of marine observatory, which for some reason was up in the mountains, believe it or not. Like, and they were telling us that like they had a bunch of sea lions there, I think,
mm-hmm.
and they were telling us that some of the sounds of the sea lions, what there was recorded to make the T-Rex roar in Jurassic Park.
Gotcha.
It was the summer that movie came out. They were all excited about that and pumped about that.
Yeah.
You're right. I love that stuff. I think it's so fascinating the way they can find
mm-hmm.
common household objects or common sounds that we don't think about and figure out a way to merge them together to make a sound that we all recognize.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think it was like a high tension power line or something.
You're right.
Or one of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
And somebody threw a rock
yep.
on it. Isn't that a cool sound? And they started
yeah.
sampling it back.
That's what,
and I'm using air quotes because sampling was getting out the reel to reel and the nice microphone
yep.
and getting that sound and then manipulating it back in studio. I mean, just a
that's what these guys do.
Phenomenal sound.
These guys, they're Foley artists, what you call
yes.
them, right?
Yeah,
yeah. They do that
mm-hmm.
sound work. they like that's their job. Like they're fascinating people to talk to or to hear about because they wander around literally just like every day their whole world is filled with like what kind of sound can I make? They're always trying out new sounds. Like what does it sound like if I throw this against that?
I want that job.
What does it sound like if I ting this against that thing? Like how awesome is that?
Because think about it, because there was no library that existed of these sounds. No. So they're okay, now I gotta make there's this made up world and I gotta go make some sounds and make it really, really cool. And they did a fantastic job about it. But to your point, I mean, if you hear the sound of a lightsaber opening, everybody knows what that sound is.
Exactly.
There's just no question about it. It's iconic,
The last thing I want to mention, which is also iconic and is probably another one of my absolute favorite things about Star Wars, is the music.
Mm-hmm.
John Williams is a hero of film score.
Yep.
You know, and he's done so much more beyond Star Wars. You know, Jaws, Jurassic Park, every Spielberg film. He's done every single Spielberg film.
Mm-hmm.
He did all the Star Wars films except for those two side films, although he did do, like, the theme for the Solo film. He created the theme music for that. And he's done now.
He announced that he's done, right?
He said that after Rise of Skywalker, he was no longer good at... I'm sure he'll still compose.
Who's going to take
it? I think it's probably going to be... what's his name off the top of my head? Michael Giacchino, I think is his name.
Okay.
He did Rogue One.
Okay.
Which obviously, you know, they borrow a lot of, you know, the themes that that John Williams created. I think Giacchino is probably the, and I may not be saying his name right, is probably the successor to John Williams in like epic film scores. Now I could see him being
that guy
to film scores what John Williams has been for the last 50 years.
Gotcha.
50 years.
Yeah.
But man, that music, like I have the soundtracks on my phone. Mm-hmm. I still have when the special editions came out. Now for the longest time, like if you got the music from any of the movies, whether it was cassette CD or whatever, you got like an abridged version of like here's selected tracks, and they were always out of order. Like they weren't in the order they were in the film. When the special editions came out, they released for all three films these little black book CD cases that had two CDs in them. And it literally is every piece of music from start to finish.
Oh, now that would be cool.
So you can pop it in and you listen to it. And basically you were listening to the film. The best part is, and again, this is why I feel this music is so iconic and I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Empire Strikes Back, again, my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And is the one where like, if I listen to that soundtrack, like that full length version, I can quote the movie alongside the soundtrack.
Alongside it? I'll be damned.
It's so connected to me. And I know that's the peak of nerdy. I know that. I understand.
Yes, when you can recite the movie and all you need is the music score, there you know.
If showing There's up for sign. A podcast wearing my Star Wars shirt and talking about Star Wars for an hour with these guys was not clue enough, I am that level of nerddom when it comes to this.
Yeah.
But I love that music. I hate that that Williams is going to leave. But I let's be honest, like that music will still be.
Yeah, so let's go back a little bit because I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I can't imagine Star Wars without that music. I mean, it's that intertwined. So were they lucky in stumbling across getting John Williams to do the score?
He'd already been in Hollywood? Yeah, he'd already been out there. Like he'd been doing Spielberg stuff in the early
70s. But they
only
got $11 million. So did they I'm just assuming John Williams not cheap at that point.
Nowadays, I'm sure you probably got to throw $1 million at him to show up.
Oh yeah.
But back then
You think he's just okay? Probably, I don't know. I don't know like, what the backstory
exactly.
is.
Exactly. I don't either. But I'm sure he probably wasn't nearly as expensive.
But I would put that is one of those linchpins that makes Star Wars what it is.
It is
his genius and his ability to compose. I mean, he's an instant. Just put him on the top ranks of symphonic composers.
Yeah. And he took a lot of like his inspiration was obviously a lot of classical music.
Sure.
You know, which I'd say most film composers do in some way. But he in particular, he loved to take, and I'm going to forget this. I want to say maybe it's Mozart, but it might be someone else who in their like operas or dramatic symphonies would do what they call leitmotifs, which is the idea that every character gets its own piece of music. It's probably most known from Peter and the Wolf. I don't know if you've ever seen a production of Peter and the Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Every character in Peter and the Wolf has its own theme music.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they're on screen together, those music kind of weave in and out of one another. Mm-hmm. He did something similar. So like Luke has his own theme. Leia has her own theme. Han never really got a theme necessarily, but you know, he probably should have, but he really never did. More of like just the rebel jaunt kind of thing. Obviously, the Imperial March, which everybody like everyone knows that. It's iconic. That became the theme for Vader and the Imperial, the Empire or whatever, like that kind of stuff. And like as you listen to these movies, especially if you listen to those soundtracks over and over again, you hear him weaving this stuff together. And like even like when you got to the prequels, like I remember at the end of it might have been the I don't know, one of the prequels, at the end of it, somewhere you can hear a very soft tinkling of din, 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 like a very light version of the Vader theme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I think in relation to a scene or something to do with Anakin, because mm-hmm. we know who he's supposed to become.
Right, right.
And he was weaving even then that light little bit of that, acknowledging like that darkness that's there that's mm-hmm. going to come out. Mm-hmm. And of course you got to the point of the third movie when he dramatically, you know, shows up and there's the theme, you know.
Yeah.
I guess actually it was more of when they launched the ships at the end of Clone Wars, they presented that theme for the first time. But there's just so much of that like I love that every time. It's one of my favorite things. Whenever a new Star Wars movie comes out, I immediately am like, I can't wait to listen to the soundtrack.
Well, what do you think about that? The fact that he didn't have a miss at all. I mean, I don't know that who has a career like that where you can score 10 movies, I guess, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
The 9 plus...
Not counting the 40 or 50 other films he's done.
He did Rogue One too, right?
No, that was Giacchino that did that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He used a lot of Williams' themes in it.
Okay.
But that's the only Star Wars film that he's literally had nothing to do with from a music perspective.
Gotcha.
Solo, he gave them the theme for Han, like Han's theme that they play at the very beginning, and that was it.
That's it.
That's all he did for that. So. Yeah. But man, just what a body of work and what an incredible talent that, you know, I mean, man's still alive, obviously. And like I said, he still does everything Spielberg does. I don't think there's been a single Spielberg film he hasn't scored. So I imagine he'll be up to, he's in his 80s now, I believe. I'm sure he was one of those men that will probably keep at it till the day he dies and be remembered quite fondly because of it.
So. Yep.
All right. Well, we have rambled on way too long of this. I do want to ask one question, though, before we get to our sort of recurring version of our recurring segment. I want to ask everybody, what is your favorite character, or maybe characters, if you have a hard time deciding? Marco, I'm going to let you start, buddy. Give me one or two characters that are your favorites in the Star Wars universe.
So one of my favorite characters is Qui-Gon.
Okay.
Because for me, he was the first gray Jedi, or the first time I learned about what gray Jedi were.
Right.
And this whole... there is no light, there is no dark, there's only the balance, there's the force.
Right.
And so the force is not good or evil, the force is the force, and I have to maintain the balance in it.
Right.
Which for me opened my eyes to that universe, and I was like, wow, this is really cool now. So Qui-Gon for me is like, and he was the first master to train somebody, like you were first introduced, like this is the first master training Obi-Wan.
Right, right.
Holy crap. Like, so that, for me, Qui-Gon.
That's awesome. I like it. So I think it's funny because you obviously talked about the Grey Jedi thing, which is not something that's talked about on screen at all. It's more of a, you know, extended universe type, you know.
Yes.
When you get into this stuff, you'll learn that stuff. But I think it kind of makes sense because he always seemed to kind of tread that line of like, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not totally on board with just all things Jedi and all things the good side, you know, bright light side of the force kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's a good pick.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Well, so mine's just too sappy. I mean, I think that, and I don't go as deep as you guys do. To me, the character I like the most, I guess, over and over and over again is Han Solo. I just think the character and the way that it was played, I don't know. To me, that's just, it has so much classic properties to it, but the way in which, now his name's evading me, the guy who played him.
Harrison Ford.
Thank you. Yeah. The way Harrison Ford played it, unbelievable to me. Yeah. And I'm always, I guess it's a part of his DNA, the way he played it. But I just think that's
I don't think he was really
classic,
acting too much.
He wasn't.
It's just him.
So I don't know if the brilliance in that, in the fact that happened, you know, that they just happened to cast the right guy for it. You know, and then, but I don't know, for me, it's very hard to pick one character because I think that, you know, in the stages in which I watched the movies, there were different characters along the way that played into that, if you will. Like for now, one of my favorite character sets is obviously the Mandalorian because that's where we're at right now. But so I didn't have quite the appreciation for that character,
right.
but it's a very deep character now that we understand, you know, some of the background around the Mandalorian,
you know,
people.
And I'm going to interrupt him quickly and say, for anybody who's watching this that is not a Star Wars fan or doesn't care about the movies, I still highly recommend The Mandalorian.
Absolutely.
Even if you know or understand nothing about Star Wars and aren't particularly a fan, I think you can find something to enjoy. Again, like I mentioned earlier, it's sort of a Western, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a lot of those themes. And yes, there's plenty of stuff in there that we Star Wars fans go, yee-hee, about. But I think you could easily watch that without knowing anything about Star Wars and appreciate it. Go on, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No. Yeah. So, but I mean, early on, you know, you have your favorite characters of I don't know. I guess it wasn't, there wasn't enough in the original trilogy to dive into all these other characters that have come about. You know, it's the Chewies, it's the Ewoks that were so cute that everybody loved and stuff like that. But the other one, I guess, you know, more recently, I do like Rey. Maybe it's just because my daughter loves Rey in that character. I know I'm at the top level. I'm not getting down into the subculture
no,
here.
Fine.
But that character is very, I don't know, I think is well portrayed. What about you?
Can I throw in a random piece of trivia, by the way?
Sure.
That I love to throw this out there. The word Ewok is never said in Return of the Jedi.
So do we know that that's the name of the character?
We do.
Okay.
It's because of the toys.
Ah, I see.
But the word was literally never said in that film.
Yeah.
They are never referred to as the Ewoks. They're just the creatures that live on the moon of Endor. But we know them because, and this was part of the reason, like, why Return of the Jedi always falls a little bit lower on my list to me. Like, that film was clearly designed to sell more toys, like, more than any others. I mean, they all were to some extent.
Yeah.
But that was the one where they were like, come on, let's fill up Jabba's palace with toys. Let's have toys on this planet that we're going to. Let's have all the coolest stuff we can. Everything's going to be a toy. And they knew. And again, I fell for it as a kid. I had Wicket the Ewok pajamas at one point when I was a kid.
Like, right.
I remember wearing these things and loving them. They were my favorite pajamas ever, I think. So I just a random little note.
From a character, I mean, that was it back then.
Yeah.
So obviously.
But I'll say this much. I'll take Ewoks over Jar Jar any day.
100%. 100%. Now Marco's really cringing.
I think Marco would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most Star Wars fans would probably agree with that.
Yes.
All right. So my favorite character, and I am going to go off... This is the thing. It's not necessarily offbeat anymore. Again, if you're you know, a fan that like has watched and appreciate a lot of the stuff, but if you only know the movies, you've never seen her or this character. Her name is Ahsoka Tano.
Okay.
She is. She was Anakin's Padawan.
During
the Clone Wars.
Yes.
So in that time,
does she
between,
have the weird.
Yeah, she's got like the head tentacle kind of thing.
Head tentacle. Okay.
I cannot remember the name of her species. She's not a Twi'lek. She looks kind of similar, but she's not a Twi'lek. Yes, I know the names playing these species. Nerd alert.
You're
folks,
on a different level than
out,
I
yes.
am, but go ahead. Yes.
Let's put it this way. Anytime my friends challenge me to Star Wars trivia, they're wasting their time. Anyway, Ahsoka was, so during the Clone Wars phase between the Clone Wars movie, you know, or the Attack of the Clones movie and Revenge of the Sith, there's a whole big batch of story there, a couple years worth of story about the Clone Wars themselves. And they've done a cartoon series based on this. That ran on Disney, ran on Cartoon Network for a long time, got canceled there. Netflix picked up one random extra season and then got taken away from them when Disney bought it. And Disney just came back in the past year and brought out a final season to conclude everything on Disney Plus, which I loved because a lot of that final season focused on Ahsoka. So Ahsoka was a very young girl who, you know, was brought into the Jedi Order and was being trained by Anakin, you know, when he had achieved the level of Jedi Knight, basically. So he was kind of training her. And you get through this as the show goes along, the story becomes a lot more and more about her a lot more often. And she goes through this epic story of, you know, just training and learning how to become a better Jedi, becoming conflicted with what's going on. She actually kind of uncovers a little bit of what the Emperor's plan was with the clones to kill the Jedi. Again, some spoiler alerts here. You know, she manages to escape the purge of Jedi. She pops back up in the Rebels cartoon series eventually, and she's going to be on The Mandalorian this season, apparently.
Ah.
Rosario Dawson has been cast to play her.
Huh.
Which I'm very curious to see how that works because it's, again, we've never, like, you know, I assume she was still around, but it's been, you know, in Star Wars time, like 20 years or so, maybe, or maybe not quite that long between where you last see her in the saga from what, if you've been watching it, where she is now. But she's an amazing character. Like, she has to grapple with like what she knows about what happened to Anakin because she understands what happened to him and knows who he is. You know, with she watched all the other Jedi practically die, and she's one of the few that are still left. I cannot wait to see her on this show. I hopefully they do right by her. She's just an amazing character.
Love interesting. Her. Yes.
So there's my pitch. Also, like, if you really want to dive further into Star Wars, check out the Clone Wars and Rebels cartoons. They both start a little slow. They're a little clunky at first, but as they get going, you get into like some really classic Star Wars storytelling that is as good as anything else you've seen in the movies.
Now, is she the only one of her species that's been in a movie?
I believe so.
Not there even the bar been, scene?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if someone was in the background somewhere. I will admit, I'm not that far
immersed. Ah, okay. So we got to look that up.
I can sadly enough, I can probably name a bunch of the characters in like the bar scene.
Yes. Okay.
Because I probably had the toys and like there was literally a someone literally wrote a book called Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, which is all that gives a story to every single character that you see
in the cantina.
Yeah.
Really?
So random, like the hammerhead guy.
Yeah.
Whose There's name a is story not behind it. I actually do not remember his name, but like they always like the action figure is called Hammerhead. But like that dude has a story that someone created for him. That again is I think why I love this world and why it's so immersive is you can, if you're smart enough and sharp enough, you can go grab any little nugget you want and build an entire story.
Yes, apparently so. All right, so let me twist it a little bit. You gave us your favorite character. Which character on the Star Wars, whatever, has been overhyped, that you feel like has been overplayed, maybe became too much of a centralized character besides Jar Jar?
Right, well... But let's be honest, they sidelined Jar Jar quick after that first film.
And which they should have.
Right.
Yeah.
I kind of want to say Yoda.
Yeah?
In a weird way.
Okay.
And I know we all love Yoda. I'm not saying...
Everybody loves Yoda.
I think it's just more of like... this is probably a prequel.
He's too central?
Well, I think this is more of a prequel Force? Problem to me. Mm. I became annoyed in the prequels when he was bouncy CGI Yoda.
Right. And that's hard for you to get over, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like my Yoda to be old, crotchety, and a puppet with someone's hand up his butt.
Yeah, not bouncing around not with bouncing a lightsaber, battling. Yeah,
right. Like I appreciated when Yoda appeared in the newer movies, like you know, in Last Jedi when he made his appearance there. I appreciated that because that was definitely old school Yoda again.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. So I don't want to say that in the sense of like I don't like Yoda, but I do. But I think sometimes Yoda is like. People want too much out of him. Than what
I think so. I mean, when I think Force, I think Yoda.
Right.
But maybe I'm wrong to do that. As Marco just, you know, the Force is a thing. You know, nobody owns the Force. It's not good or bad. It's just, but when you think Force, to me, the novice, you think Yoda.
Yeah.
You know, he's the Force. I wouldn't be surprised if the Force came from him. How many mega whatevers does he have?
Midi-chlorians. Well, they said Anakin had more.
More than
Qui-Gon
Yoda.
Said, I haven't seen this many midi-chlorians. Even Master Yoda doesn't have this many.
All right, fair enough.
Midi-chlorians,
so.
God. It's like that's a curse word in Star Wars. We don't have to bleep it out of our podcast.
I didn't realize I just cussed. Yes,
I'm going to go through and bleep all that out.
Yeah. It's just going to be one long string of like, bleep, 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 bleep.
Oh.
All right, well... This has been a fun conversation. We honestly, I say this every episode that we could keep talking.
Yeah, but you know
forever,
what? I think we're going to come. There's. I'm looking at my sheet here. There's things that we didn't cover here, John.
So is there? What did I miss?
I don't know. We're just going to have to come back to some of these things.
We can do a Star Wars episode every year if you want.
Right. I think we're going to have to.
We could do one about every single film.
Yeah. Yeah. We could. We could.
This will just become the Blue Stars Star Wars podcast.
The universe is endless.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, before we move on to our final segment, I do want to thank our founding members, Honeywell, Elo, Epson, Star, Zebra. That is them, right?
That is them. Yes.
Sorry. I don't always remember off the top of my head. Who probably didn't think they were signing up for a Star Wars podcast when they helped us out, you know, to get this started. But, hopefully you appreciate this anyway.
Yeah.
And hey, listen, if you want to get in touch with us, tell us all of our bad takes on Star Wars. You know, this might bring out all those awful members of Star Wars fandom to tell us how wrong we are about everything. Don't email us. you can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can email us TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com. All right, as always, we usually wrap up with a Value to the VAR segment. We're going to have to skip that today. I mean, the Value to the VAR is, you know, go watch Star Wars. So
no, it's to understand that we're all in this together and
That's
we all
right.
like, you know, hey, geeking out about
and
Star
hey,
Wars.
This could be, you know, here's a tip for VARs. If you find out that someone, you know, you're working with is a fan of Star Wars, throw some stuff out there. Listen to this podcast. Even if you know nothing about it, say, well, hey, I was listening to some podcast and they're
right.
talking about Ahsoka Tano. Who the hell's that?
Who's that?
And if they get all excited about it, you might go in a sale out of them. I'd be like, man, I'm going to give this guy my money.
Anyway, there you go.
So there you go. There's your value of the bar.
Yep.
But let's do what's tech connecting with you,
right.
Which, you know, this is usually where we talk about a specific piece of technology or something cool or exciting as interesting as. Obviously, this week, I want to take a Star Wars focus.
Mm-hmm.
Marco, I'm going to start with you. What is tech connecting with you from Star Wars?
So on October 8th of this year, a group of guys called Hacksmith Industries on YouTube released a video of their 4,000 degree plasma lightsaber build with that was retractable.
Awesome.
And has blown up the Star Wars, the real life Star Wars nuts.
Awesome. Yes.
You can find it on YouTube. Look it up, Hacksmith Industries.
We will share the link in the show notes.
Yeah. As of right now, it has 23.6 million views. And it's just really fun to watch.
That's awesome.
Something really neat. Science and film coming to life now. Yeah.
I mean, what does it say about a universe of fans that will go out there and actually try to build the technology that was in the movie that is so perplexing as a lightsaber?
And let's be honest, we would all cut limbs off. We had lightsabers.
Oh, yeah.
The first time we tried to do some kind of like thing or whatever,
dead.
We'd chop the top of our head off. One of our hands would be gone. We'd kill our neighbor. We'd destroy our house. Like,
but that's okay. The fandom is moving forward. Right. We're going to produce.
Thing. It's a good thing we don't have these things.
I feel like the science of prosthetics are coming along so far. We will all be Darth Vader at some point.
Yeah, not quite. I don't know. It seems like the lightsaber is leapfrogging our robotics in this current world that we're in just yet.
Definitely.
Very fascinating, though. So a real working lightsaber.
Yeah. Check out the show notes. We'll link to that YouTube video so you can check that out yourself.
Like, if you had a lightsaber and you could wield it as well as a Jedi, you would have no match here on normal Earth, would you? I mean, right? You could.
Yeah,
just...
but you wouldn't have the Force, though.
Oh, I see.
Because, someone could still shoot you in the back.
Nah, fair enough. Yeah,
you wouldn't have,
the
foresight
thing.
To know that, ahead of time.
And then they got your lightsaber.
Yeah, because that's just it. Part of the ability to do that is a Jedi thing, having a talent with the Force.
The Force.
Some rando can't just pick up a lightsaber. They could do some damage, but we saw that in Force Awakens when
that's true.
Finn grabbed one.
Yeah,
And he did okay with it. He was fine.
Right.
But, you were never going to see him do the kind of stuff that a real Jedi would do.
Fair enough.
He got his ass handed to him by Kylo Ren at the end.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
All right, Dean, Star Wars tech connects with you that is not a lightsaber?
Okay, fair enough.
Take it off the table now.
But one is really hard for me to say because there's so much cool potential tech in the Star Wars. But I don't know how you can't start with the hologram. I mean, the hologram communication, I would have thought if I went back to my 7-year-old self when I first was watching Star Wars, oh, yeah, we'll have that someday. Where's my hologram communication? I want to be able to, I want the little hologram so I can send messages intergalactically that way. That's a pretty cool technology.
That tech is actually kind of here.
Okay.
You can do it.
Yeah.
It's not well known. It's not widely dispersed now, but there is, as long as you have kind of a flat surface, you can project holograms now.
Fair enough. Okay. So we're getting there. Hovercraft.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want a hovercraft? I mean, again, this is another one of those technologies we should have had by now. So as a 50-year-old, I'm a little bit upset that I don't have my hovercraft that was first. We are getting there.
We have maglev technology? Is that what it's called? Like those trains you use in Tokyo?
Where it's magnetics.
But you have to have you have to have something for it to be on.
Yes.
It's got to have a opposing magnetic force.
Correct.
There has to be some kind of track.
Yeah.
Right now.
So we're close, but not even really close.
Come on. Hovercrafts are really just a big cushion at this point. Like the actual hovercraft.
Oh, the ones that we have?
Yeah.
It's just a big fan. Yeah. You're just riding on a big fan. You can't, it's not as cool as a real hovercraft.
I'm with you on that one.
And then the last one I got, the Death Star. Come on. How do you not build something that can blow up? What kind of technology is that?
Planet-killing technology that mankind should never be involved in.
And so I got to do a quick sidebar. How does that thing, move around?
It has, propulsion systems.
It does?
Yeah.
All right.
It can actually go to warp speed.
No.
Or light speed. Whatever. What is it?
Warp speed.
It's light speed in Star Wars. My bad. I'm sorry. Look, I am a Star Wars and a Star Trek fan. Those two things can coexist. I know some fans don't believe that, but they can.
So you're telling me the Death Star, they can do the zoom and it go boom.
You see it in... In Rogue One, it comes out of light speed at the planet at the end of Rogue One at Scarif.
I guess you're right. I did not put two and two together. Yeah.
They don't show it in the original film.
That's even more unbelievable.
And then in Return of the Jedi, it wasn't finished, so they couldn't do it there,
Yeah. Right.
But it can go to light speed.
Okay. All right. Well, what kind of technology is that?
Who knows?
Do we know
what kind that we probably will never get to?
What powers the Death Star? Do we know that? What is the energy force?
I guarantee you it's out there. I don't know off the top of my head.
No way. I thought that would be like a gimme for you.
Now, the laser was the kyber crystals, because they do talk about that.
The kyber crystals,
which is what Jedis use in their lightsabers also.
Right.
But the actual power supply of the Death Star itself, I'm sorry, I don't know that one.
Oh. What is it again? What's the force of the Yoda? Or the force? The Magda?
Midichlorians?
Midichlorians.
No, it's not midichlorians powering the Death Star. They just trapped a bunch of them in a big old bug net.
I know I just offended the whole Star Wars universe, but you know, hey, it's got to be powered by something. How do we not know that at this point in time?
That was another fun thing I enjoyed about Rogue One, is the fact that they decided to come up with an excuse for why a little hole existed that you could shoot some torpedoes through and blow it up. That is, to me, that is an encapsulation of fandom for Star Wars at its finest, where someone decided, look, we need to explain this.
Yes.
It's ridiculous that there's a tiny hole on this giant death machine.
Itty bitty.
This planet-sized death machine.
Yes, right.
That you can shoot some torpedoes in and blow the whole thing up. But they gave us the backstory.
Which,
they
take a left
it.
Turn, by the way. I mean, it's like the goes. Yeah, right.
They explained that. They actually gave
they
us
did.
An explanation.
They did. And I was satisfied, by the way, with the explanation.
I was too, actually.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. So, I mean,
even if right. it wasn't necessary, it was fun.
So what's your tech?
Let's see. Oh, you know, I did want to mention one other thing. I'm remembering all these random sidebars. I just saw something the other day that pointed out that the hologram in Star Wars at the beginning with the hologram of Leia, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Who shot that?
What do you mean, who shot that?
Like, look at the perspective of that hologram. It can't come from R2-D2. She was facing R2-D2.
Oh, really good point. So who shot that?
It was a third party somehow.
Dun, 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 dun.
I guarantee you, someone's going to come up with that. If it's not already out there, someone's going to create that story of some like random rebel trooper that was assigned to hold the camera and got murdered or something, you know, on his way back to his family. I don't know. I guarantee you someone has a story about
that. And it's somebody kind of removed a little bit, too.
Yeah, because it's basically like, it's almost like the
side down
shot,
the, hall.
The scene you see down the hall of her, you know, in front of him and punching the buttons or whatever. That's basically the perspective of the hologram.
We see that in Rogue One, do we not?
No, because she films that after like Rogue One. She gets the plans.
Oh, right.
When they're escaping, she films that while the Empire is chasing them down.
Got it. But to your point, yeah, who did film that?
I don't know.
So it's not R2-D2 that just has this omniscient camera that is like shooting in 360.
Someone, you know, R2 cracked me up because like you go back to the prequels and R2's like flying around and shooting, you know, liquid everywhere and like, you know, can do all this amazing stuff. And, you know, granted, you know, technology helped with that. But like, you know, and then you see him in the original trilogy, which is 20 years later. And he's all you can do is roll around. And he tips over the first time somebody bumps into him, you know. Anyway,
he's not quite as cool.
God, we're going off on so many tangents here.
Yeah.
This is the part of the podcast where people are like, no, I'm done. These guys are just too nerdy for their own good.
All right.
Man, I didn't give this enough thought of the tech. I mean, the one thing that sticks out to me is the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Even though I know it's supposed to be like a hunk of junk.
It's not.
It's an amazing spaceship.
It's not a hunk of
junk.
And I
love it because, and this is another one of those things we didn't really talk about.
It's a cargo carrier, right? Is that?
It's meant to be a freighter.
A freighter.
It's a freighter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's meant for hauling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So another one of the things I love about the effects of Star Wars is, unlike a lot of other science fiction, Star Wars didn't bother trying to make everything look pristine and clean,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, part of the reason some of us don't like the prequels as much, because they did try to do that a little bit there.
I gotcha.
I love the fact that the Millennium Falcon looks like a lived-in ship. It looks like
two beater.
Dudes, one of whom is 7 feet tall and hairy, hang out in this thing all the time.
Yep.
It looks like it's like the, you know, the bachelor's apartment of space. It's a piece of junk, you know, and it's not, you know, pristine. It's not clean. It's not going to be. They weren't. You're not going to see, like, once a week, Chewie and Han aren't out there mopping the floors and, you know, and taking Windex to the windshield or anything. No.
Like,
and that's one of my, I love that. I love that aspect of it being such a, you know, just this hunk of junk kind of ship. But it's a very iconic ship. It just looks cool. The way it moves around, it probably does not really make sense in any way whatsoever. You know, like from an engineering standpoint, maybe it doesn't make any sense. I mean, again, in space, it's one of those things where people are always like, it's got to be aerodynamic. It doesn't have to be aerodynamic in space.
No.
Maybe in the atmosphere, that doesn't make sense. But in space, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But like, I love that. And I think like that was one of the scenes that I loved more than any in The Force Awakens, which, let's be honest, that movie, especially of the new trilogy, was all about just, you know, blatantly calling out fandom, you know, like, here's all the cool stuff you want to see in a Star Wars movie. We're going to just throw it all at you for two hours, you know? Well, that's the scene when the Falcon shows up, like when they're on the run and those, you know, the TIE mm-hmm. fighters are shooting at them or whatever, yep. and they blow up the ship there they were going to go to, and like Rey is running past one ship, and like, and, you know, Finn's like, hey, what about that one? And they, you don't see it yet. And she goes, that's a hunk of junk. And they move on, doesn't occur to you. And then she's like, all right, we'll take the junk. And it pans back, whips pans back, and there's
there
the Falcon.
It is. Yeah.
That was one of the moments in that movie where I'm just like, like that's perfect. That is exactly the kind of stuff I want. I am a sucker for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and leave it to the fandom. You can go online now, I guess, and get like detail about what the Millennium Falcon, like the insides of it. You know, it's all mapped out.
Oh, yeah.
Where they sleep, where the kitchen is, yep. where the cargo goes, yep. all this good stuff that you don't see. Maybe there's a whole movie around that. Just the ship itself. I mean, look at how many hands
it would
gone
be kind
through.
Of. I mean, obviously, you know, they touched on that in Solo.
Didn't he pick it up somehow? Like
he got
like
it
on
from
a bet?
Lando. He beat him in a game of a card game called Sabacc and won it. Yeah.
So where did Lando get it from? Probably from somewhere else. You know, it's like this. It's
he
like
probably
this
won it from someone else too.
This beater that just keeps going.
There we go.
New Star Wars
trilogy is nothing but the you know just the timeline of everywhere the Falcon's been over
yes,
the years.
Yes. Yes. Brilliant.
That'd be fantastic.
Thanks.
All right. Well. I think that does it for us. We have nerded out
for
long
now.
Enough. For now.
For now.
You know, I do realize I had one question here. What do we want to see from the future of Star Wars? We didn't even get to that.
Yeah, we'll see? There you
table
go.
Table that for another time.
There you go.
But hey, as always, thank you so much for watching. Hopefully you enjoyed this kind of crazy off-kilter side effect, you know, sort of episode here. Marco, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate actually getting to hear your voice on camera, or on the pod at least.
Yes.
He won't come on camera, but he will at least get on the pod.
The voice of Marco, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, thank you for joining us on this, and we appreciate it. All right, well, listen, we have one more episode left for this year. We're going to do a bit of a year in review for 2020. Is that something we even want to do?
We do. We got to put an end to this year. So okay. We got to wrap it up. We got to put a bow around it and be done.
True. We're going to talk a little bit about what worked, what didn't work, and we'll get into some fun, goofy stuff as well. You know, we'll talk about some of our favorite TV and movies of the year, the stuff we did, you know, just what excited us this year. So it will still be a fun episode. But thanks so much. It is time for us to unplug. So until next time, stay connected and... May the Force be with you. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Trying to help your customers open or reopen safely with social distancing and infection control protocols? Elo offers touchscreen solutions to help with employee access, guest check-in, self-service, and much more. Their modular platforms increase safety, eliminate paper-based processes, and reduce the cost of visitor management. Elo also provides thorough cleaning and disinfecting guidelines. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on bluestarinc.com or contact your Elo representative. Providing the best patient care and highly efficient management requires technology you can trust. Now you can equip nurses and other staff with a versatile productivity tool that's built for healthcare. The Honeywell CT40 HC mobile computer is an all-purpose device that simplifies, streamlines, and helps error-proof healthcare delivery. It's also an Android Enterprise recommended device, rugged, easy to deploy, and supports upgrades through Android R. To learn more, contact your Blue Star Honeywell representative. Full solution selling is becoming a key tool of the sales channel, but completing that solution often requires a software partner. Zebra is actively recruiting and partnering with independent software vendors to transform the edge of enterprise by adding them to their Partner Connect program. Develop innovative applications for Zebra products.